these sichot is going to be, are generally going to be focusing on larger issues and not the necessarily the same type of sichot that we have in the at other times. You know, then we spoke about earlier about homosexuality. Issues with regard to modern orthodoxy, I guess you could take with last Thursday's summation as in place of this the Tuesday Sicha. So today I want to actually continue on the modern orthodoxy track and talk about a phenomenon which is called social orthodoxy. Has anyone ever heard of the term social orthodoxy? Can someone give me a definition of social orthodoxy? Ben?
I think it'd be like keeping, like being, acting in an orthodox way, like being kosher, all that, but just for the sake of being part of the Hevra, not really for the acting.
Okay.
Being for the social and not for the orthodox.
Being part of the social and not for the orthodox. In other words, because you know, you're in a certain society, you're in a certain milieu, and it's not a bad milieu to be in, right? In other words, let's say keeping Shabbat, for example, so allows you to disconnect from the rest of the world for 25 hours, allows you to tell your boss that don't even bother trying to get hold of me because I'm not going to pick up the phone in any way, allows me to connect with my family, allows me to connect with my community, have a good time with my friends. Right? There's a lot of nice things about Shabbat. And if the price for Shabbat, if you will, is that you're going to not do malacha, right, that's a worthwhile price to pay. Okay, that was the inconvenience of Shabbat is less burdensome than the benefit that I accrue from Shabbat is beneficial to me. Okay, and you could say the whole thing in terms of being in a nice society, the community, etc. And so there are people who say they don't really believe in God necessarily, but have a but are orthodox in that regard. This is a, in a way, it's sort of a, ironic, but it's somewhat true, that it's a reconstructionist approach, if you will, to Judaism. Reconstructionism, as opposed to the other branches of Judaism, or denominations, whatever you want to call them, streams. So, basically takes a sociological approach, as opposed to a religious view, Judaism as a social bond. Right, and that is what is, if you will, moving the religion forward, or the society forward, and it takes it a very different way. It's basically saying you don't need all of the practices in Reconstructionism, right? But here you're more or less saying, as I said, ironically, paradoxically, you're taking that in that direction. I want to take a very, very short look at, not so much at social orthodoxy. I mean, I'm going to talk about social orthodoxy. My question is that a positive thing? Is that something that we should try to stamp out? Right? Maybe you wouldn't say, oh, well, it's important for me to stamp out, but do you think I should be trying to stamp it out? Should I be preaching against it? Right? So it would be very easy for me to preach against it. Very easy to preach against it. For obvious reasons, right? In other words, they're saying we're taking God out of God. Right? God out of the Torah, in effect. I'm going to keep it, but without having the basis of, you know, of true belief in God. It was when I was a little bit older than you, there was like found myself in a party game. I don't know what a party game was. It wasn't a party. It was just a game. Right? Where somebody was, a group of people just talking. This is the question that was asked. Everyone had to give an answer. Like, if you could, it was a really, and my response, you'll understand what my response was at the time, why I thought this was absolutely ludicrous. So the question that was asked, everyone had to say, if you could take out one mitzvah, right, be a 612er, Right? One mitzvah you have a pet peeve against. What mitzvah would it be? Right? People said whatever they said. It was my turn. I was like the fourth or fifth person in the circle. They said, okay, what do you have to say? So what did I say? Anochi Hashem Elokecha. He said, once you take out Anochi Hashem Elokecha, right, then you don't have to keep any of the others. Right? The whole thing is silly. What do you mean? You're playing around. This one I'm not going to do. That one I'm not going to do. But, okay. Well, this is, I was an angrier young man at the time. I don't know if I would say that today. But I'm just saying, it's just and that was the end of the game. But the, you can imagine I was not invited to other parties. But the, because of that. Then I became a Rosh Hashiva. Anyway, the point though is, right, that's in a way, that's, no one would use the term social orthodoxy, right? That is what social orthodoxy is. So then you have nothing but it. So it's an easy thing for me to attack. And I'm certainly not a proponent of it, don't get me wrong. But I want to take a look very, very briefly, because there is a time constraint here, in terms of from our parsha, and from a completely different vantage point. Okay? And that's with regard to Yaakov and his, we'll say, less than straightforward approach to getting the bracha from Yitzchak. We're all familiar with the story. And he comes to, and there's a certain line which sort of highlights it, right? And the Torah says, "Vayomer Yaakov el Aviv, Anochi Esav b'chorecha." Right? I am Esav, your firstborn. Kol asiti kasher dibarta elai. Right? I've done as you commanded me. Kum na sheva v'achla mitzidi ba'avur tevarcheni nafshecha. Right? Please sit up and eat from my hunt in order that you should bless me. Okay, and that's when Yitzchak's response is, right, Hakol Kol Yaakov, Vahadai Yidei Esav. I mean, there's more to it there. Right? The voice is Yaakov's voice, the hands are Esav's hands. But the Anochi Esav B'chorecha, right, on that, so there's a very famous Rashi, right? When I say very famous, right, it means that you should know it, right? When I say famous, it means that I know it. So this is a very famous Rashi. What does Rashi say? It
says Hashem's name.
Anochi Hashem, that's another one. That I would put in the famous one. But that's the category. Oh. That's good. That's very good. What Anochi Esav B'chorecha. Question, of course, how could Yaakov be lying? And what's the answer?
Rashi does a funny split by pretty much saying,
right? Anochi, comma, Esav B'chorecha. Right? I didn't lie. Right? And so I have an answer for the Rashi. I'm not going to answer the Rashi. I don't think the Rashi should be understood in that such a simplistic way. But the problem of Yaakov lying is such a glaring problem that Rashi is, and it's not Rashi's basing himself on Midrash, there's a disconnect, right? Yaakov is known as the Ish Emet. How could he be the man of truth when he does so many things with subterfuge? And this is just one example. This is perhaps the boldest example. And there are two basic approaches to understand this. All right, I'm really streamlining it. One approach is basically to say, what? Right? I'm sure that this is not the first time you've come across this question. Right? So give me some approaches.
Like to say the Jewish people,
Okay. So therefore, there's two basic approaches. One says it was justified. Right? And if I had a little more time, I would read to you a piece from the Michtav Me'eliyahu, Rav Eliyahu Dressler, who talks about what is truth. Right? And this needs to be discussed on a much broader plan. What is truth halakhically and morally? When can you lie? Right? Is truth, do you always have to say the truth and nothing but the truth? Are there times that you're allowed to lie in order to deal with the situation? And so his approach is that Yaakov is totally justified. The lie here wasn't really a lie, right? And he even says that the lie was truth and the truth was a lie. Okay? It's a very interesting piece and you should look at it. It's also translated into English, right? That's one approach. The other approach is to say that Yaakov, this is one of the circumstances where Yaakov did something wrong. Okay? Yaakov did something wrong. And the people bring proofs for this, for example, from the following Medrash. The Medrash says, when Esav heard, and he let out a cry, Eitzak, Eitzak, Tzak, Hagdolah. And so the Medrash says, Kishmo Esav Divrei Aviv, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Kol Mishu Omer Shakadosh Baruch Hu Vatran Hu. Whoever says that God is a person, is a being that overlooks things, Yivatrun B'nei Moai, his innards, meaning himself, he himself as a person, should be overlooked. But rather, Ma'arich Apei V'Gabei Dilei, God has a lot of patience, God has a lot of time. It helps when you're out of the framework of time. You have a ton of time at your hands. So then, he says, he waits as good to, he bides its time. Zaka Achat Hizik Yaakov L'Esav. Yaakov called Esav to cry out. Dichtiv Kishmo Esav Et Divrei Aviv, V'Izak Zaka. V'Heichan Nifralo, when was Yaakov paid back? Bishushan Habira. Time Shushan Habira. Shenemar Vayizak Zaka Gdola Umara Ad Ma'od. That Mordechai let out a bitter cry. Esav's payback. Now you're right. That's another medrash that says, makes the idea, which Rashi also brings, by the way, that Yaakov was away from his father for 22 years when he went to Laban. He's punished Yosef. Right, but that's another example, not exactly the same sin, if you will. Here, Esav crying out is being punished by Mordechai crying out at the hand of a descendant of Esav, Haman being a descendant of Esav. Okay, so there's the, if you will, the poetic justice. But it's saying, in effect, that we have to look at what Yaakov did and ask ourselves, is what Yaakov did is really truly justified? So, I want to take a third approach. Third approach that I want to take is the approach that Saul kind of hinted towards. And that is that you can do the right thing. You can do even I wouldn't necessarily call it the right thing, might even call it the least bad thing. You could do what needs to be done because there is no choice in the matter. Given the circumstances, and now don't have time, but given the circumstances, it's not just Yaakov, it's also Rivka, it's a whole dynamic that exists. There was no better option for Rivka and Yaakov than to engage in this subterfuge. If they were to ask the question, they would be told, given the circumstances, this is what you have to do. Does that make it a good thing? Doesn't make it a good thing. In other words, there are times that you make the least bad decision, and there are consequences to that decision. Right? You make life choices. Right? You're all going to make life choices. Now, life choices aren't necessarily bad or least bad choices. They sometimes are good and better choices, right? You're going to decide a career path. Just to take two noble professions, okay? Or at least one noble profession. Being a doctor, as opposed to being a rabbi, okay? Now, there are people who do both. I know that. But let's say that's your choice. You're going to go into that. You're going to go into one. Now, if you become the rabbi, there's people's lives that you could have saved that you're not going to save. And if you become the doctor, there are people's souls that you could have saved that you're not going to save. But you have to make your decision, right? There are consequences to life choices. You choose, right, one girl to marry, right? And you have closed the book on 3.5 billion other females on the planet, right? Okay? That's the way it is. Is it... You may, there are consequences, right? Some of the consequences are obviously are good, some of the consequences are not so good. But that doesn't mean that you don't make the choices. Right? Yaakov makes a choice. It might have been in the circumstance the least bad, but there are consequences. Consequences are that he's going to have to run away. Consequences that he's never going to see his mother again. Consequences are that he's going to have this distance between him and his father. Consequences are that there's going to be a continuing battle between him and Esav. Lots of very bad consequences. It still might be the least bad option given the choice. In sociology, there's a question, right? There's a larger question. There's what's known as the question of just, you know, it's in the news right now over the e-cigarette Juul controversy, right? Two different approaches, right? Is should you be engaged in harm reduction, right? Or should you be engaged in abstinence, right? Do you say, no, we don't have Juul, don't have e-cigarettes, these things are bad? Or do you say, well, they're less bad than actually smoking cigarettes? And do you try to work it out, how to smoke, you know, or how to use the Juuls for smokers? If you take the harm reduction approach, same type of issue that, you know, let's say, do you give clean needles to drug addicts? All right? Etc. All of these questions, major sociological, societal issues that are involved with it. Right. So given when you, by the way, when you buckle your seatbelt, right, the fact that there are seatbelts, there are airbags in cars, right, that's also a form of harm reduction. It would be a lot safer not to have to just to ban cars, right? But society says we're going to have to live with this risk and we'll try to reduce the harm that's involved, right? So we do this all the time, and there are other times that you stand on principle. There's a just to give a example, the Gemara, there was a controversy in Spain, and this becomes a major halachic test case. There was a controversy in Spain shortly before the Inquisition, whether or not to allow for legalized prostitution in the Jewish community. Why? Because the argument was made that if we don't legalize prostitution, so there was a death penalty that existed for Jews engaging in sexual activity with Christian women. Okay, this is in, as I said, 15th century Spain. And people are going to engage in this activity anyway. And because of the not be afraid of the risks. And it's better to create a legalized prostitution in the, within the Jewish community. And the question was brought to the leading poskim of Spain. Should we do this? And the Akedat Yitzchak, or Yitzchak Arma, right? And it's written, if you can take a look, Akedat Yitzchak, Siman Chaf, and Bereshit. He describes the discussion in detail. And he says, absolutely not. Because there's a big difference between, right? People said also, you're going to have, it's less of an aveira to do this than for people to have affairs with married women. Right? So you're going to, it's harm reduction. That's basically their argument. And Rabbi Yitzchak Armas said, we can't sanction this kind of activity. There's a line. You have to say, if a person's going to take a risk on his own, that's his decision. But we can't condone that. And if the society condones a lesser evil, so then the society, the reason why it's in Siman Chaf in Horatio, that's the where he talks about stones. So he says, and then you're in stone. You can't condone evils. There are certain things that you have to make that line, cut across, right? So now, this is the dilemma. This is the dilemma. You know, Yaakov engaged in harm reduction, as it were. And halachically, yes, there are times that you are allowed to lie. Truth is not the absolute value. There are times that real politic comes in. Now is not the time to get into the details of that. Some other time we can talk about what are the halakhic parameters of that. But there are consequences when you do that. And there are times that you have to say, I can't do it at all. Right? The price that's being paid is just too great. And knowing the difference, that's the problem. All of this leads me back to social orthodoxy. Because I can get up here right now and I can say, it's terrible. And it is problematic. You know, no question about it. Right? It's just taking Anochi Hashem Elokecha. That's the only thing that you're taking out. Right? Everything else is still there. But at the same time, I'm going to leave it as a question. Right? Because I will tell all of you. So, having said that, that's a line you shouldn't cross. No, you shouldn't be social orthodox. You should be asking yourself, why am I in this religion? What is the religion really about? And at the same time, yes, absolutely. At the same time, I just want to close with the following medrash. The medrash is in the in Eicha Rabbah. Medrash says the following. It's talking about different ideas about churban. Rav Huna Rabbi Yirmiyah B'Shem Rabbi Shmuel B'Rabbi Yitzchak Amar. Batzinu Shevitera Kadosh Baruch Hu Al Avodat Kochavim V'Al Gilui Arayot V'Al Shvichut Damim. We find that God was willing to forgive Avodat Kochavim, Avodah Zarah. He was willing to forgive, turn a blind eye to sexual immorality. He was even willing to turn a blind eye to murder. Velo viter al ma'asa shel Torah, but he wasn't willing to turn a blind eye to the trampling of Torah. Shenemar al ma avda ha'aretz. The Navi asks, "What is for what do, was the land lost?" Right, and the end of the pasuk we'll get to in a moment. It says, "Alavodak kochavim al gilui arayot ashvichut damim en ktivkan." The Navi's answer was not al ma'avda aretz because they worshipped avodah zarah. Why? Because they had murder. Ela al azavam et torati, because they abandoned my Torah. Rav Huna v'Rabbi Yirmiyah b'shem Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amrei, and the same Rav Huna continues and says, "Ktiv va'oti azavu ve'et torati lo shamaru." They abandoned me, and they left. They did not keep my Torah. And there's the drasha, not pshat, but it's the drasha. Halavai oti azavu ve'torati shamaru. Would it be, God says, that people would leave me, but yet keep the Torah? Mitoch shayu mitaskin ba. If they were involved in Torah, engaged in Torah, hama'or sheba haya machziren lemutav. The structure of Torah, the light in the Torah, would make people better. So I look at that midrash, and there you go. Are you going to say the moment that you leave the Torah, so you're in effect in a situation? Not leave the Torah. You leave God. Oti ozavu. I left God. And so, what's the point of the Torah? Or do you say, no, there's a structure. There's the Torah itself. There's the community. you're in the conversation, right? It's worth your while to stay within that. So you have to be in that push me, pull you bit of, paradox. Right? You should all be thinking about this. Maybe some of you think of yourselves as social orthodox. Right? Maybe some of you just know someone who does. Some of you may have just heard of it. Okay? But think about it. On the one hand, yeah. But I would say at some point in life, we're all somewhat social orthodox. All of us. What do I mean by that? Okay, we always have questions at different times. We're always not 100% knowing without a smidgen of a doubt that this is the right thing to be doing. We have our questions, we have our doubts. But you still create the framework. You don't just throw out this, if you will, the baby with the bathwater. You have to be asking yourself, okay, what is this framework? What does it do? Is it just there because I like a Friday night dinner with my family? Or is it saying, well, I'm keeping the Shabbat. And keeping the Shabbat means that I will begin at some point be asking myself, why am I keeping Shabbat? What are the values of Shabbat? How are they impacting on me? And can you go from the other nine of the Dibrot back to Anochi Hashem Elokecha? So this Midrash says that you can. Right? So don't necessarily ask to think of things as being totally black and white. Harm reduction, sometimes it comes in the form of a sheker, but there are consequences, by the way. Don't get me wrong. Right? It hollows us out if you live a social orthodox lifestyle. If you're not searching for the values, so then that's very problematic too. There are consequences, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, the other consequences might be worse. So we'll just end with again with that line from the Medrash. Right? Halavai otia zavu, right? Were it that they would leave me, v'torati shamar, but they would keep my Torah. My bracha to you is that you'll keep the Torah and you won't abandon God either. Okay, mincha.